Hello and welcome to FTI's Cybersecurity Podcast Series, The Expert Briefing. I'm Dave Harvey and I'm a Senior Director here at FTI Consulting. Throughout this podcast series, FTI experts will discuss the latest issues and trends impacting the world of cybersecurity right now. And today's conversation is centered around complex investigations. I'm joined by my colleagues Oliver Price, Laura Kippen, and special guest from RPC, Ben Dennison. I'll let my guests introduce themselves.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm Oliver Price. I am FTI's Head of Incident Response for Europe, the Middle East, India, and Africa, based in London. I've spent the best part of the last half decade helping organizations respond to information security incident and breaches, including everything from small business email compromise incidents up to and including large ransomware events caused by nation state level threat actors.
Hi, I'm Laura Kippen and I'm a Senior Director for the eDiscovery Tech Team here at FTI Consulting. I have a background in digital forensics and experience in large cross-border investigations.
Thanks for having me. I'm Ben Dennison. I'm the Director of IT at RPC, based in London. Prior to this, I was the CTO at the Serious Fraud Office for 5 years, where I led a complete overhaul of the law enforcement agency's IT systems, positioning them as a leader in the use of technology in complex criminal investigations.
Thanks for those introductions, and it's clear to see that today we've got some fantastic experience in our virtual room. So a natural first question I would suggest would be, well, why is this relevant to me? As a board member, what is a complex investigation? Why should I care about it? And what do I need to do about it? And if I could start just by asking Ben, in terms of being able to summarize, what is a complex investigation?
So a complex investigation could be something that's driven by a regulator. It could be driven by a law enforcement agency. It could be driven by civil litigation. And how you would define complexity will vary from case to case. So it could be because it involves a large number of people, and whether that's on the outside or the inside of an organization. It could be considered complex because there's a large amount of data. It could be considered complex because there are lots of different stakeholders, lots of interested parties, and therefore lots of different avenues your investigation could take. In terms of the impact that those sorts of complex investigations can have on organizations, they can range quite wildly, and there could be financial consequences. There could also be some which are a little bit harder to quantify. So for example, just the suggestion that an investigation is taking place could hamper a business's ability to trade, particularly in certain areas or certain sectors where people are naturally wary of that. So being able to come to a conclusion relatively quickly is in a company's best interest.
Thanks, Ben. So this is clearly a challenge that impacts not only senior leaders, but everyone within an organization. Now to begin, I'd like to explore what our guests are saying in terms of current trends around complex investigations. Ollie, could I ask for your thoughts?
Absolutely. Thanks, Dave. And I think this is a real good news, bad news type situation, as we often find in the cybersecurity world. So from an incident breach perspective, we've seen organizations are getting a lot better at that immediate response to information security breaches. So that sort of first 72 hours to week period after those initial incidents kick off, we're seeing organizations have really got a handle on what they're doing there, or at least much better than they were certainly a couple of years ago. However, what we're seeing is the secondary and tertiary impacts of those incidents are increasing, particularly as that bar is rising because of that more effective initial response. So within that, we're seeing an increase in litigation, the concerns from third-party auditors around the integrity of financial data, particularly those that are used to sign off corporate accounts, the difficulty in proving that valuable intellectual property data has not been stolen, or as we've seen more recently, the litigation focusing on the liability of directors and officers. One of the trends that certainly has continued for several years now and hasn't really changed in recent days is in our investigations, we've seen that significant number of the breaches that we're seeing remain largely preventable. So although a lot of the press is centered around incidents that relate to nation state level actors, we're still seeing that the best defense you can have against these types of threats is realistically maintaining a strong vulnerability management process, and that's going to save you from most of the things that we're responding to at the moment.
Thanks, Ollie. Some great points in there. One area I'm really interested to uncover a little further is the role and the complexities around data in the complex investigations. Laura, what are your thoughts on the area?
So I think one of the problems that I see is the amount of different data types and data sources that we need to collect. For example, we're not just looking at the standard email data anymore. We're also looking at chat data, video conferencing systems. We need to collect that quickly and it needs to be interrogated so that we can drill down to the responsive documents as quickly as possible. One of the things we need to keep up to date on as well is our forensic tools being able to collect this data.
Thanks, Laura. The comments that you made there about the forensic data are really fascinating. And I was wondering, Ben, from your perspective, does this proliferation of data sources and data present any additional challenges?
It does. And I think actually, if you look at particularly complex investigations, the proliferation of data is a major problem. And if you think, for example, if you were just investigating, certainly from a criminal point of view, one individual, then you might have one set of devices. Multiply that by 5 or 10, then you've already making it more complex. But actually, if it's, for example, a multinational investigation, you then start getting other challenges in the mix as well. So you have different data protection rules, you have different rules around data transfer. And in criminal cases in particular, there are jurisdictional and procedural issues which make it even more complex. The interesting thing there is that regulators and law enforcement agencies in different countries do work very well together and they go out of their way to cooperate with each other. But it's not quite as simple as that because you do have legal processes which have to be followed. And that can then cause delays in your investigations, which might slow down the overall momentum of an investigation.
Thanks, Ben. The increasing complexity that we've discussed there is clearly something that we're seeing resonate with boards. So in terms of being able to go back to them, what elements of advice would you have for them at the moment?
So I think whilst, as the old adage goes, prevention is better than preparation, we unfortunately live in the world of when, not if, when we're considering information security incidents. Therefore, organizations should be ensuring that when they're preparing their incident response plans and processes, that those plans and processes contain what's needed in order to answer the more complex questions which are becoming the focus of these kinds of investigations, both from a technical and procedure perspective. So, for example, one of the common questions we see is, have the technical and organizational measures that have been implemented met that rather elusive bar of appropriate for whatever the risk of the organization is? And I think it should be relatively simple for organizations to make sure that they have considered that, documented it, and prepared that as part of their incident response process.
Thanks, Ollie. In terms then of from the enabling architectures and the technical underpinnings, Laura, what would you suggest?
I think the clients need to know exactly where their data is stored and how easy it is to collect that data and search it before it's extracted out. I think an issue that I see is sometimes when we get a matter like this at FTI, clients don't necessarily know what assets their individuals have. So for example, how many laptops or what type of mobile phone, and then it becomes difficult because you then have to think about if they were given a new laptop, when did that happen? Was that data migrated from the old one? Is there any point of even looking at that laptop if it's not within the time frame of the investigation? And these are things where it could actually help the client to get to the relevant data quicker, but it also might reduce cost because they might not necessarily need to look at every single data source that individual had.
So really understand the assets that you've got and the data in particular where it's stored. Excellent. So Ben, in terms from your side, what else would you suggest?
I think building on those points, I think it's absolutely vital that you understand what the risks are, you understand what the threats are, and you understand what the consequences are of something going wrong. I think it's really important to prepare and understand how you would respond to an incident. So that's both having plans in place, but also knowing who you're going to call. You're going to need somebody to manage that incident response for you. Most organizations, no matter how large, are not going to have that resource in-house. They might have some expertise, some people who've been through that before, but really you need to know who is going to be able to advise you on that situation. And that ranges from cyber incident response to communications to how you're going to manage the fallout with your clients as well. So key point for me is you need to plan, but in reality, there is only so far you can plan, because until you know exactly what you're dealing with, and each scenario is going to be slightly different, it's impossible to plan for every eventuality, but you can do your best.
Thanks, Ben. So some points there that really resonated with everyone in terms of assuming the worst is going to happen and planning accordingly. One of the things that's been quite striking for us is seeing companies move to new secure infrastructure, but leave legacy estate behind that just isn't secured in the same way. Ollie, any thoughts in terms of some of the risk capture as firms consider digital transformation or migration to the cloud?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the word complex hides a series of issues here. And I think it's not just complex investigations. When you're engaging in large, at least significant change of infrastructure, those are large and complex projects. And making sure that you're measuring the risk appropriately across all of these different systems, and then planning for how that migration takes place over a relatively extended period of time, can leave organizations where, as we see, you'll often see a breach which will take place just before a client has migrated off certain infrastructure. And you know, it's almost that sort of old adage where the incident happens the day before retirement type of situation. And we see a lot of that. And I think a lot of that is the final conclusion or the end point that happens when those risk calculations don't map across the significant different sets of data and the significant different infrastructure that's really in place. And unfortunately, because of the way that litigation is really lining up behind all of this, we're starting to see that even relatively small incidents can impact huge numbers of customers. And at that point, you're looking at, whilst it might only be £200, £500,000 per individual, if it's millions of individual customers, you're starting to look at a billion with a B as the actual impact of those types of events.
I think just to add there as well, is data retention policies. So for example, if the individual, the client has data that they shouldn't have and it should have been deleted by now, and that data was then taken through a breach, then if there'd been some sort of mapping exercise to delete that data, then the client wouldn't have been at risk with that data being taken.
That point about the data retention is really key, and it brings to mind the silos that we often see within organizations. In terms of the investigations, how have you seen the gaps between maybe data privacy, SecOps, IT teams? How do you think that has impacted some of the investigations you've been involved in?
I think the data privacy team have an idea of what data they need to keep and what should be destroyed, but then the IT team probably have a different idea, and they probably keep data for longer just in case, or keep it on backup tapes, and those backup tapes don't get wiped because it's on a long list of actions which they never get around to doing. So I think the different silos don't necessarily talk to each other, and they all have a different priority of what's going on right now. I'm not sure, Ben, what you've seen in your past experience on this.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. And I'd agree with that. I think there is a challenge that you have these different silos, different approaches, and different people looking to achieve different things from that. And so, you know, to your point, from an IT point of view, you might not want to destroy things, because actually from experience, you know that people do often come back looking for it again at a later date. But the flip side of that is also from an IT point of view, and particularly from an IT security point of view, you want to decommission old equipment. You want to get rid of old tapes and old data, because it actually makes it much easier to maintain. And if we look at some of the best ways to protect yourself against attacks at the moment, it's making sure that your servers, your systems are patched and you're protected against any vulnerabilities. And the biggest challenge there is old legacy systems where you can't necessarily do that. So certainly from an IT point of view, you'd want to keep things as up to date as possible. But the challenge there is that you can't always do it. You might have data which needs to be retained for various reasons. And so you're trying to balance the needs of your own team, but also from other parts of an organization who have different objectives.
Just on that point, I think in particular, the situation where you're talking about, you've got different stakeholders within an organization that are likely to be interested in relatively different outcomes, it is fascinating, and you will work with teams that are very, very skilled in the specific thing they're doing. So the IT team will know everything about their own infrastructure, but they'll be very unclear about what the end goal of the legal team might be, for example, in the incident we're responding to. And quite often the best work we do is simply in providing the bridge between those two. And I think that there's a long way that organizations can go in order to build those bridges themselves. If those bridges had started being built prior to the incidents, then I think that that would have gone a long way into answering the questions before we even become involved.
I think just to jump back in there, so I think that's absolutely right. And the IT team will know that there is data there, they will know that there are systems there, but they won't necessarily know what that data is or why it's being retained. And there may be very good reasons for that. There may be very good reasons around perhaps an investigation is underway and there is a need to retain that data for a period of time. And so in some scenarios, IT is being driven by, it might be a legal team, it might be a data team who need to keep that. Can't necessarily tell you why, but you're trying to juggle the expectations of various stakeholders, and it can be quite a difficult balancing act sometimes.
And it's almost like the unattended bag on the tube, isn't it? Everyone kind of stands around and looks at this data, and they're not quite sure who's actually responsible and who's taking the next step on it. Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of how you inculcate that understanding and that training post-incident, what we've seen is that needs to be done at every level of an organization. It's just not at the working level where you're dealing tactically with retention of logs or analysis of logs, but even board level, helping them understand why you need to do a particular thing and why it's important to have those sorts of legal frameworks in place that will allow an investigation to happen when it needs to. Thanks all for those comments. Now, one of the things I'm really keen in all of your thoughts are is about looking to the future and where you think complex investigations will go within the next year or so.
Thanks, Dave. So we, as an industry, I think are still pretty early on in this journey. And as I said, as the bar continues to be raised, so will the costs of not meeting it. We've already seen an increase in regulatory sanction and the attendant litigation. And this is a trend which is likely to continue for years to come. I think we can also expect to see that because we're in an adversarial type of situation, threat actors will look to take advantage of that increasing regulation, that increasing litigation in order to increase their own profit from these types of situations as well.
Thanks, Ollie. And you mentioned there the impact of regulation, and Laura mentioned earlier the proliferation of data and data sources. On that subject, Laura, how do you think other recent innovations such as the Internet of Things could impact investigations from an e-discovery perspective?
So I think we're just going to see more data sources as time goes on. And also, I know this is a big thing that everyone talks about, but the amount of data that we see and drilling down further to find the responsive data quicker, especially in a breach, you want to know what's happened as soon as possible. Whereas the more data we collect, the more data we've got to analyse, we've got to think about the tools that we're using to drill down to find those responsive documents. For example, the use of machine learning, but then also looking to see how we can use that with different data sources. For example, if we're talking in an email, it's a lot more formal than what we would if we were talking in text messages or chat messages on our laptop. So we've got to think about how those tools can be used to compare the different ways that we communicate.
And Ben, earlier you mentioned not only about the data sources and the explosion of data that Laura's also spoken of, but also some of the challenges that go with that in terms of areas like encryption. So what's your prediction for how this might develop over time?
It's hard to know exactly what will happen, but certainly if we look at what's happened over the previous 5 to 10 years, you see the proliferation of encryption. You see new apps coming out, which people are using, which might have stronger encryption, which might be better at hiding data. You see that vendors, makers of smartphones and other software, are not necessarily going to help you extract that data or get to that data, even in extreme or time-critical situations where there might be a risk to somebody's safety, for example. So the challenge you have with large amounts of data is one, as Laura said, trying to cut through the noise, trying to cut through these massive volumes of data, trying to find out what's relevant and trying to find it faster. And two, making sure you can get to that data so you can interrogate it in the way that you want. So you can invest and make use of the latest technologies such as AI and machine learning, which will help you to filter through vast amounts of information. But you need to make sure you can get to that data first. And that's a challenge that has been around for some time. And I think as the tech gets better and better, as the encryption gets stronger, that challenge is only going to get bigger.
This increase in complexities is really striking. And we've discussed a lot today about resilience planning. We've discussed about ideas for board members. We've talked about planning. In terms of if you had a question that you would take to a board to help them at this moment in time, Ollie, what would you suggest?
So I think one of the words that you could really apply to basically every single organization over the past 12 to 18 months is change. So I would expect that everyone out there has seen their organization go through a significant amount of change in the last year, year and a half. And I would ask whether those changes have been reflected both in teams and then between teams and the processes those people are expected to be able to follow in crises type events. If they are, then excellent. But really what we'll see is during crises, those weaknesses come under pressure, that's where cracks form, and that's what creates problems in complex investigations like this, because no one knows exactly the questions they're meant to be asking or where they're going to find the answers, and preparing for those is going to pay dividends in the long term.
Thanks, Ollie. So we're really situating cybersecurity in terms of the environmental context. Laura, in terms of, you know, given the context that we're operating in at the moment and the cost pressures, especially that we're seeing on companies, what would the question that you would take to a board be?
I'd ask them if they knew where their data is stored and how easy it was to collect it. For example, we might be able to help them if a complex investigation came up. We would help them to reduce the amount of data that was collected, because the more data we collect, the more we process, the higher the costs. So if we could help map that exercise before there was a crisis, then that would reduce the amount of data that we collect further down the line.
And would you see a difference in investigation if a company had managed to refine the amount of data that they held in terms of fines or litigation?
Yeah, I think if there's a company that has planned for this, then they know exactly what needs to be collected. They know that they can run search terms in specific systems and not other systems. Whereas if we are working with a client who hasn't planned, then it's kind of collect as much data as possible, just in case it's needed, push it through the processing tool and try and identify the responsive content. So you're obviously going to incur higher costs because it's trying to find as much data as possible to pull out in as well quicker amount of time.
So you're really showing the regulator, if something did happen, that you've got a plan in place and that you were working through it. Ben, what about yourself?
So I would say absolutely, you know, if you can target what data you are going to provide for an investigation, then it's going to speed things up. It's going to make the process simpler. And key to being able to do that is knowing what data you have, where you have it, what systems it's in, how accessible it is. I think if we're looking at cross-border investigations, this is obviously more challenging, particularly with larger organizations, because it's not necessary that you have one email server that everybody is using. It might be spread across multiple systems. It might be, some of it might be on-premise, some of it might be in the cloud. And I think key to being able to manage that data, particularly when there's a lot of it, is understanding what you've got. I think not every organization will have a good handle on that. So that's a very good place to start.
Thanks, Ben. So really some very practical steps that any organization could take in response to what is potentially a very complex issue.
Yeah. And actually, just to add to that, I think, particularly in the context of perhaps a regulatory or law enforcement investigation, if you're able to assist in that investigation, if you're able to show that you are willing to cooperate and to help them to look at the situation and look at the data, I think it will work in your favor, particularly when it could otherwise turn into a very, very long and sprawling investigation, which in itself could have consequences for your organization.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. And certainly for those, as you mentioned, a lot of cross-border data sharing inevitably means a lot of regulators to be kept informed of an investigation. So it's a key point. Thanks, everyone. Some real fascinating insight there. And I'd like to thank you all for joining me today. Remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you'd like to find out more about what we do here at FTI Cybersecurity and how we help build a resilient future for clients, please reach out to me or any of today's guests via the FTI website.